If you're looking to save some money on your wireless plan, take a look at Visible Wireless. They're a transparent wireless carrier with nothing to hide. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, where you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. One line wireless, just $25 a month with taxes and fees included. That's unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Switch now at Visible.com. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. Like Visible, the wireless company making wireless visible.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This is Steve Downes, the voice of Master Chief, Sierra 117, and you're listening to Podcast Unlocked, the world's number one Xbox podcast. Now, finish this fight. Master Chief, out.
Welcome, everybody. It's Podcast Unlocked, IGN's weekly Xbox show for February 9th, 2021. And as usual, I am joined by the usual crew. Not always, I guess mostly usual. Sometimes people dip in and out, but we've got the group back here. Miranda Sanchez, good to see you.
Hello, I'm back from vacation. It was very nice.
I'm glad to hear it. Did you just play a bunch of video games and chill out?
I try to take away time from my screen and specifically from this spot. So I read a lot, I journaled a lot, and I did play some games. I started a second island for Animal Crossing, don't ask. And then I also played the medium.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second. Brandon Tyrell, welcome back. Good to see you again.
Hello. Good morning.
You are looking just more
hirsute
styled. Yeah, it's, you're like just getting more fashionable by the day.
The hair's growing.
Fashionable is not the word I would use. I dream about a haircut these days.
You just have to drive to out of California, and I'm sure you can get one.
Get one of those Reno, Nevada haircuts. Oh, thanks for the close-up.
Wow. I'm from Reno. What the heck?
Yeah, I was
going
to say, you go visit Cam.
That's rude.
It's the closest big little city I could think of.
Hey, no, there's some good people. People give some good haircuts in Reno. I'm not saying all places, but where I get my haircut, Reno. It's good. So
famous for the haircuts.
No.
Cam Hawkins, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Ryan. How's everybody doing?
Mostly good. So Daisy the Boxer is behind me today. She's just hanging out. You can't see her on camera. But if you hear a really sad dog coughing, the poor pup's got a nasty cough going. So I'm taking her to the vet this week. So just kind of making sure she's staying close at all times. So if you hear a random hacking sound, that's what it is, and you should feel sad and not laugh.
Oh
no!
Just to get the show started on the highest of notes,
somber note.
No, she'll be fine. I'm sure it's I'm sure she just has a little kennel cough or something. But that's what veterinarians are for. So we'll get it taken care of. All right. There's a lot to cover this week. It was a very, very busy week of news. But first, some leftovers from last week, and this is totally on me. I started the show last week with, the medium. We're going to talk about our thoughts on that. That was our homework assignment from the week before because of the embargo. We couldn't talk about it two shows ago. And then what happened? We got right into our main Mass Effect topic, and I completely forgot about the medium. So Let's circle back
to
it. Especially now, we've got everybody back. So everyone's done their homework assignment. And, Cam, I'm going to go your way first because I know you finished it. And the rest of us have just put in some time. So what are your thoughts on the medium, the first official next-gen Xbox exclusive?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not something that I think that people should base off what the capabilities of, you know, the Series X or the Series S can do from a graphical standpoint, technical standpoint. But it's a really like, I think the game's really unique. Like, I think that the switching of the camera shots when you walk around, and there's some fun puzzles in there, and you know, there was like one jump scare, because I'm not a big horror game person, but I, you know, I played through this one, and there was only one time where I legitimately like jumped from something that popped up at me. But you know, genuinely, it's like, I thought the story was pretty interesting, and you know, the ending was good. I enjoyed it overall. It was a fun little experience. You know, nothing to highly like praise about, but I definitely think that it's like a great game for Game Pass subscribers. And you know, hopefully in the future, whatever Bloober Team is working on, like, it definitely was an ambitious, I feel like there was a lot of ambition in this game, yeah, despite the budget not being like of a AAA level, but it will be interesting to see. Hopefully, you know, this is a great like portfolio piece to show like maybe future publishers or future people that are willing to fund Bloober Team's next project. Like, hey, like they can make really unique, interesting games that that like could be even more. That could be like that AAA level if they are given the money for it. And like some of the cutscenes, like the one that we're seeing right now, like it looks good. Like the models look good. Like, but again, it just doesn't, I don't think it hits the level of like the power of what the Xbox Series X could give.
Yeah, I think you make a good point about, I mean, kind of for better and for worse, this game probably got more attention than it would have if it had come out in 6 months or a year, because it is the first actual Xbox Series exclusive. And so as a result, they got probably more players willing to give it a look. It got some more attention. But at the same point, you know, it gets a little more scrutiny as well. You're right. It's, you know, it doesn't run at 60 frames. It doesn't have quite the highest production values, but it looks decent. And the whole technical reason that it's a next-gen exclusive is because, as it becomes very clear early on in the game and throughout the game, it's effectively running two games at the same time with the spirit world stuff and the real world stuff, and you're moving around in one or the other or both at the same time. Miranda, what did you think of the time that you were able to put in?
It's definitely got a fun, like, spooky mood. I think it kind of, as Cam was saying, edged right on like the line of horror, where I think for people maybe like us who aren't as good at handling very intense horror could still enjoy it and like find the fun in the story that it's trying to tell between like the, you know, the land of the dead versus like land of the living and this person who, you know, the medium between them. So, and I did like the puzzles and how things were sort of set up. I didn't get too far in it. I had some other plans, and honestly, I was kind of surprised. It's like, oh man, I made it time for this conversation, but I wish I would have played a little bit more so I was a little bit better prepared. But I do like how things are set up. As far as the actual gameplay goes, I do like the attention to detail and like every little piece of information you can kind of pick up and interact with. I also like how your player character, when she's walking around, like she will specifically notice something. You can see like the character like look at it, so you don't miss it, because not everything's interactable, but there are things that you could miss. And so I like how that played pretty well. I also liked, just like a fun thing, I liked that there was a cat at the beginning and then I got to meet the cat. So, but yeah, I think I will keep playing through this. I don't know. I'm curious to see where it'll go.
Cam, do you think, before I go to Brandon, Cam, do you think there's sequel potential here? Or does it feel more like a one-off to you?
It does feel like a one-off. And I like don't want to explain why, because that would somewhat spoil the ending of the game. But it definitely does feel like a one-off game that, you know, up for interpretation type aspect to it. That I personally like. While I really like what they did here, it's kind of like, I don't know. I get Remedy vibes from this game, where in the sense of like, I feel like that this is a nice one and done game, and I would like to see Bloober Team work on something next, like new, that's a new IP that, you know, might be of the same aspects of the medium, or, you know, the of the type of genre that they're playing with here, and see where they go with that. Because yeah, I think that like the story in this game is more or less over by the end of it, and I don't really see the potential for a sequel. So
the sequel could be the medium well, and then a prequel could be the medium rare.
I know.
It's too late. You can't undo what I just said. Anyway, Brandon Tyrell, from the time you spent, what were your thoughts on this one?
Didn't spend any time at all, Ryan.
Just pass you by. We'll just move right along. Well,
I don't play the spooky games because I don't enjoy them whatsoever.
You know, Miranda doesn't either, but she did her homework, so she gets an A and you get an F.
Okay, we need to go back to the stacks because I specifically said at the end of the last episode that I was not going to play this game.
That's fair.
I used to really, really enjoy spooky games. I think I don't know when this shift happened, but at some point I stopped. It's not a fun time for me. And we are in kind of a world where there are so many games to play that I don't have to play spooky games. If there's a reason for me not to, and the reason for me to not play spooky games is that I physically don't enjoy them.
Yeah, that's fair.
Physically.
No, it's true. I said this before.
The tension's tough.
When you watch a scary movie, you can, you know, close your eyes or like white knuckle through it. But when you play a scary game, the story doesn't continue until you actively like, okay, I know the badness is coming, but I have to walk through it, you know? And that's just not an experience that's built for me, and that's fine.
Yeah, it's definitely, for those out there wondering who might be thinking, well, wait a second, I don't like horror games either. Maybe I'm not going to play this. It's definitely, it's not like body horror. It's more of just kind of psychological horror. So, I would agree that I played maybe 2 or 3 hours, and I don't know quite how far into the game that would put me, but I had the one jump scare too. I don't know if it's presumably the same one that Cam was talking about. It's early-ish in the game, not like super early, but it's a little creepy, it's funny, Cam, that you said Remedy vibes, because I previewed this before it came out, right before the holidays, and then the preview published right at the beginning of the new year after we got back, and I called that out. I thought it was Alan Wake-y in a lot of ways, in a lot of good ways, and that's... I still feel that way after spending some time with it, but yeah, it's a solid game. Glad, you know, it's a nice exclusive for Xbox, and we'll have to see. Hopefully Bloober Team will keep making exclusive Xbox games and keep upping their game figuratively and literally. All right. Next up, let's get to the news proper, 'cause there is a lot of it this week. First up, there appears to be a big new Halo game spinning up that's not Halo Infinite, something else. I know it's shocking that there would be other Halo games from Microsoft's biggest franchise, but there was a job listing on Microsoft's site, still there, for a producer at 343, and it went up on February 6th, so a few days ago as we record here, and the listing states that 343 is looking to hire a producer, quote, to help develop a new project in the Halo universe, which presumably signals that the new employee would not be working on Infinite, as I said. The job listing specifically asks for experience in shipping AAA games for the current generation, which all but rules out the idea that that this would come in something else, like a mobile game or some sort of other transmedia experience, like an anime or something like that. It does appear to be a big game. Now, there's no clues about what kind of game it is, but or when we might see it. Now, I want to go around the room first here. Brandon Tyrell, what would you want to see if you're kind of thinking, all right, if there's another big budget Halo game spinning up, what would you want to see? Because obviously it's probably not going to be anything too close to a mainline Halo first-person shooter. It's going to be some other vein. You know, it's going to tap into some other vein.
I'm curious why you would think that this wouldn't be the groundwork and the pre-production being laid for the next mainline Halo.
But maybe, I mean, you might be right. And that's fair to bring up for sure. I mean, we do know that from when Miranda and I had talked to the leads on Halo back at the gameplay reveal, the now infamous gameplay reveal, that they had said, you know, there won't be a Halo Infinite 2. They'll just keep, you know, building on this. But that doesn't invalidate your point at all. So you think maybe this is simply just kind of keeping the Infinite story train rolling as time goes on.
Maybe, right? I mean, look, it's a producer role, and producers touch every part of the project. So, you know, who knows? Like, this could be another drop within that sort of Infinite ecosystem that they're building up. Or, like you said, it could be a Halo Wars thing as well. But the timing-wise, you know, we know Halo Infinite was ideally already supposed to be out. So this last bit of development, you know, this last year that they're working on is mainly polish and getting everything in order. So it stands to reason, I think they could be scoping out whatever the team or the, you know, the Halo project teams with an S next thing is going to be, and bringing on a producer to help scope pre-production and all of that stuff makes sense to me. I mean, without speculating, who knows, it could be anything. Like, the Halo brand is, you could take it anywhere in any direction. But just as far as the timing lines up, we could be looking at something that's set to come down the pipe 4 or 5 years from now.
That's great points there. Miranda, if so, you know, Brandon mentions could be a Halo Wars type of thing. And my observation from reading this was I've seen enough of game development. I'm not a game developer, but I do know that producers don't necessarily have to, especially with Halo, where 343 and Microsoft control it. This could be a 343 producer on something that's being developed out of house, in the same way that Halo Wars, like, there were 343 producers that worked on Halo Wars that was made at Creative Assembly. Well, the second one was Creative Assembly. So what would you want to see if let's say that this is some sort of branching out of the Halo universe?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this, and honestly, I'd like a confined, like, short storytelling experience like we saw with ODST. Obviously, it had a lot of similar mechanics to the mainline Halo series, but because you're not playing as a Spartan, I think having that different perspective is really neat. And as much as I do think Halo Wars is cool, I don't just want their offshoots to be like tactical games. Like, I want to explore other things as well. One thing I really liked about ODST was the mood of it. Like, it's very different from the rest of Halo. It's got that kind of noir mystery sort of thing going on. And I would really like for them to play with more tones in the Halo universe. And obviously, I think there's a lot of stories that could be told too. So taking away from maybe even just like the Spartans as a whole and moving on to other places would be really neat. I don't know what that would look like. Honestly, I haven't read a lot of the newer books. I've only read like two of the books. And those were like the first few. So I know there's a lot of lore out there that they could probably play with if they wanted to get into something that's already established.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Cam, how about you? What would you want to see?
Man, like, it's kind of hard because, you know, my first thought was like, oh, it could be like Halo Wars 3, just because, you know, it's...
And it could be. Recent.
Yeah, it very much could be. But, and then I'm trying to think about, like, what other kind of genre that would fit Halo in that sense, where that would, you know, that would make sense for that world and that universe. And I just really can't think of anything. Like, I could, and I really don't think that whatever they're working on is a first-person shooter. It doesn't really make sense to me, unless it is kind of what we were talking about before, is that it is a it is like an additional campaign that's going to come to Infinite, right? Because they said that like Halo Infinite is going to be a living game in both single player and multiplayer. So that like that definitely could be a possibility, but that also just doesn't seem right to me. It just doesn't feel right in my gut. So I really don't know what it could be. I just don't think like really any other genre outside of the kind of like the RTS that we get in Halo Wars, like that would fit in Halo. I mean, like it could be, I don't know, it could be like space battles or something like that, maybe like that could be something. But I don't know. But like regardless, like I'm excited for more Halo. You know, I've been playing through the campaigns leading up to Halo Infinite this year, and I just like, it's just like one of those times where you just forget how good Halo is.
Yeah.
And now I'm just like, hearing that more Halo's coming, I'm excited.
Well, hey, space battles were touched on in Halo Reach. You know, it is a place that the series has gone before, boldly gone before, but only for one mission. But it was probably the most memorable mission in Halo Reach, I would argue. So, now, yeah, for me, like, I really enjoyed both Halo Wars games. That said, I'm not sure I need another one. Mm-hmm. I feel like two, I had my fill of it with two of them. I mean, if there is a third one, sure, I'd play it. I mean, it would look better. It would run better on the Series X for sure. I mean, this is a series that has spanned. It's the first one was on 360. The second one was on Xbox One. But yeah, Halo Wars, I'm pretty set there. The thing, I think maybe the most obvious one that none of us are mentioning, because we're all a bunch of horror game fraidy cats, is is a horror game where you could be like just a human marine or something, mm-hmm. a non-Spartan, like encountering the Flood on a random planet, and you have no idea what's happening.
Oh my God.
Because they could use... trying to wear that same game developer hat that Brandon has professionally worn before and ably used there in this, and when he was talking about his opinion that this maybe could just be future content for Infinite Pipeline. But you know, you could, if they make a horror game, that they could not only use the same engine, it could be first person, it could use the same Infinite engine that they've spent all this time and money building. And, you know, horror games do sell. They are popular. There's kind of there aren't a lot of really like AAA ones anymore. Resident mm-hmm. Evil being the most obvious example. Like Silent Hill's been MIA for years. I wonder if a first person horror game revolving around the Flood could be the way to go. As far as Halo branching out into something new.
It's funny that you mentioned that, and at the risk of sounding like a hypocrite, I was about to say, like, how cool would it be to do a first-person horror survival game?
How dare you?
Right? Well,
let's make Miranda review it.
Here's the problem with
it. I would do that. Right? I would suffer for that. I would suffer for Halo.
Oh, my God.
Just that, though. I'll write them a review. I'm sorry, I was crying while I was doing this because it was so scary, but, you know.
The problem with the Halo universe is power creep, right? Because we're at a point now where you have interdimensional like machines that bend space and time. So there's this element where you feel like in the Halo universe, it's got to keep getting bigger and better. And that's kind of what we saw with Halo 5, right? To the point where it's kind of almost lost its potency, I think. But if you strip it down and you bring it back to the very basics, where Ryan, to your great point, if you were a Marine, right? If you were just part of the USMC and you were on some weird remote border planet in a village and you encounter the Flood for the first time, or, you know, elites in their cloaking. Imagine the first sequence where you're walking through it and you hear like, roo, 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 or that like plasma sword like light up and oh you can't God. See it. You just see the plasma sword like oh at the God. End of a long hallway and you're like, what the? You know,
I would say, I guess that's not too scary though, because at least for me, just because we fought so many elites, like, yeah. I already know what the plasma sword can do. It's fine. We're good.
But
like, even if I were just, like, a grunt, like, that's, I think they would have to shift how things are portrayed. And honestly, I think just focusing on the Flood, because I think they are a little bit more freaky as far as things, because they're really quiet and gross.
And you can experiment with them more. You could have, like, other Flood mutations and things and have some new creature designs.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, the Flood is just, it's kind of boring almost. It's just like big meat sacks that run at you, you know?
Flood.
Like, you need to, like, integrate it with characters. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think even if you're looking at this setup, like, you could see maybe some Marines who get stranded on a planet somewhere battling the Covenant, and then, like, one of them's about to get, you know, offed by an elite, and then just it goes dark and no one knows what happens, and then you just wake up in, like, caves and other systems, and you just have to find your way out of the Flood, and it's sort of a survival horror where you have really limited ammo. And there's a lot of things you can do with it.
Yeah, I really want, like, a BioShock level of unreliable narrator where the grave mind is, like, walking you through how to get out, and you're secretly, like, going deeper in and doing what only humans can do, you know, like, kind of the plot of Halo 1 or 2, I guess.
All right, Phil, hire us. We got something cooking here.
Yeah, Brandon, did you apply for this producer role? Because I'm thinking maybe you should.
I did not. I'm very happy right here on Unlocked, a fine IGN podcast.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon, I'll tell you, I think you made an excellent point about the power creep in the series. And I mean, Miranda, you hit on it with, I mean, that was one of the strengths of ODST. Is it, you know, you weren't a Spartan in it, and things suddenly, you know, enemies that used to, you could be able to just flick them away, were suddenly, like, pretty darn dangerous in ODST. And so I mean, you wouldn't even necessarily have to be a UNSC Marine in a Halo horror game, first person horror game. You could just be a citizen. You could just be a random guy or girl who just, like, happens upon this and gets drawn into this nightmare. So
that's the beauty of, like, resetting the context, right? You can strip things down. So imagine you're just a lowly Marine or a civilian, and you see, you know, whoever the equivalent of, like, the Sarge, and he's, like, barking orders and kicking ass and taking names. And then suddenly he turns around and Elite just picks him up by the face and kills him, like, right in front of you. That resets your entire context for how dangerous those things are going to be. And then imagine, like, ODST, the first time you see ODST drop in with the, like, whoosh, and the pod comes out of the atmosphere and lands. Like, what a cool moment that is. Or even better, a Spartan landing in front of you, you know? So I think that universe is ripe for more stories, but instead of expanding, it needs to kind of retract almost in order to make things more relatable and human.
Yeah. And hey, restore Halo to being a proper M-rated game like it used to be, right?
I would love that.
It was M-rated, and then the ESRB figured out, wait a minute, this isn't really, this is teen. This is T for teen. You go full horror and it could go back to being an M-rated game. So
we need more screaming.
Well, I think
more
we've got it. I think we cracked the code. We've figured out
alien kisses.
We figured out what this should be. And it's a first person horror game. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. So the other just final item of note on this from this job listing, it does cite large project team in there and experience shipping AAA games. So whatever it is, it does sound like it's a fairly large scale project. So, you know, whether 343 would develop it internally after, because, you know, you got to figure once Infinite ships, the whole, you know, they don't need the whole studio on, you know, they're going to continue supporting it. So you could maybe carve out another team to start on another thing. Or, as I said earlier, this could be a thing where they partner up with an outside studio, as they did with Halo Wars, to make something. And it could be a total third party studio, or it could be one of the other internal Microsoft studios. Now that there are 7,000 internal Microsoft studios.
Yeah, that's true.
Including a whole slew of new ones from Bethesda. I mean, you never know, right? You never know where Microsoft, they've got a lot of options now of where they can go with this.
And remember, the Halo universe is kind of ripe for licensing. I don't know if you guys remember Spartan Assault, the twin stick shooter.
Yeah.
That to me isn't AAA, but, you know, that's sort of a subjective term at this point. In addition to the arcade machine we went and saw. Now, the fact that it's a listing for current gen kind of throws that out there. But we could be looking at almost anything, like
almost anything. So
yeah,
it's a long wait until we figure out more about what that is.
And finally, speaking of Halo, 343 also teased a little something with regard to the Master Chief Collection, which, Cam, you said you're rolling through now on Legendary, running back through the campaigns. In the 343's latest MCC weekly flighting and development update, it said that while things can change, they're trying to offer fans of the Master Chief Collection a new way to play. That's got to be xCloud, right? Is there anything else it would be? Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just like, Nintendo Switch. That would be wild.
It's not out of the question. No. It could happen.
Yeah. It's not out of the question, but I don't think that is the case. That's like the last game that Xbox would put on the Nintendo Switch. Halo is like the poster child, you know, like that's not going to happen. But wishful thinking, to say the least. It's got to be xCloud. I mean, with the Master Chief Collection not being on xCloud, it's got to be on xCloud as soon as they're ready for it. You can basically like write that check and send it to the bank, right?
It's certainly not going to be Stadia, so I imagine it's... Oof. I imagine
Stadia is still alive. They're just not developing anything for it internally at Google anymore. But to Cam's
point, you want to keep that as close to the chest as
exactly.
You keep that in house as possible. So playing Master Chief Collection on your phone via xCloud sounds like a new way to play it to me. You know.
Yeah. So assuming we're correct on that, look for that in the not too distant future. Next up this week, yet another big story. There are many. E3 will be back in digital form, no meat space show this year, which at this point in time so far in 2021 is not a surprise. The ESA saying, quote, "We can confirm that we are transforming the E3 experience for 2021 and will soon share exact details on how we're bringing the global video game community together. We are having great conversations with publishers, developers, and companies across the board, and we look forward to sharing details about their involvement soon." Now, the plan includes having multiple two-hour keynote sessions from game partners from June 15th to the 17th, roughly the same time of year that E3 has always occurred, an awards show, a June 14th preview night, and other smaller streams from game publishers, influencers, and media partners. The broadcast event would be preceded by a media preview week, yay for us, and getting our coverage together in a timely manner, and demos would be released to the public, yes, during E3 2021 to help celebrate the future of video games. Miranda, your thoughts first here on the return in digital form of E3.
I'm curious to see how this is all going to play out production-wise. But mostly just kind of like, okay, cool. Just another thing to have on the books. Good to know that they're going to be doing something that they're planning ahead. I mean, last year was like kind of a very much in the air of, is this as bad as we think it is? Yes, it is. And so until we got to the yes, it is, they didn't really have a way to sort of, I guess, pivot from where they were. More digital events are always good. I think there's some different... I guess companies that have done really good digital events. I know there was like the DC fan show.
Fandom.
Yeah. I was Fandom. Like, is that really Fandom? Was that what it was?
Yeah.
Yes. That was a really fun show to watch. So I hope if they could somehow match that, that's what I want to see more of. And honestly, I think I really loved our Summer of Gaming, but that was a kind of a different format as far as it being a little bit more long, I guess you could say. So if we are going for like a concise, focused event, Fandom is the thing that I look to as far as events online. So hopefully something like that.
Cam, what say you, sir?
It's kind of a mixed bag to me because part of me is just like, why don't all these people just do their own stuff during the, you know, during the time of E3 and not have to worry about all of the kind of third-party things, and they can just focus on their own stuff, being all digital, specifically. But then another side of me is just like, not all games and developers have that luxury like Xbox and Sony and Nintendo do and EA and all that stuff. So it's kind of like I'm glad that it's happening for the sake of like smaller developers and those that like, you know, wouldn't particularly get a spot on like the Xbox stage or the, you know, or whatever Sony does or Nintendo. But also part of me is just like, you know, we kind of got everyone to do their own thing last year and it turned out like pretty well in my opinion. Like, you know, I don't have really any complaints. So it's kind of a, we'll wait and see how things turn out. See like who specifically, shows up and you know, works with, the ESA on this. So we'll see.
Well, it's, you make a good point about would some of the big boys even want to do this after branching out on their own last year? I mean, EA has not been officially part of E3 for several years now. They've done their own thing, which is much to Miranda and my chagrin in our roles at IGN, happens before E3 starts. So we have to go down there even earlier for the Saturday thing with EA. So EA has not been in there. I think Activision had pulled out at the last actual E3 in 2019. Sony was not there in 2019 as well. So it's, you know, who's left, Brandon? I mean, what it's should this even be a thing, or like did E3 kind of miss its chance by not being able to get its act together last year?
I mean, I can't get too into it. But I think last year caught the ESA by surprise in the same way it caught all of us off guard, which is how serious is this really? I mean, what is
understandable?
What are the restrictions going to be? So it really did, like, they ran out of time, right? Which is why there wasn't a huge E3 proper presence around that, you know, that time frame that we're used to seeing every single year. This year, clearly, you know, with the benefit of foresight and hindsight working for them, they can plan out and have some sort of digital, you know, presence that they're at least able to, you know, it's not going to capitalize on what they normally do in a physical year, right? And I know a lot of people, like my friends and colleagues in the industry, are like lamenting the fact that there isn't a physical event, because it's a great opportunity to not only see your friends from the industry, but to really network and make meaningful connections. Like, so much of E3 is just the conversations you have with people around the event itself. Having said all that, I still think that there is space for the ESA to have some kind of event in June, digital, that caters to publishers, developers, basically anyone, you know, to Cam's point, anyone that isn't Microsoft or Sony or EA or, you know, these big, even Konami sized Ubisoft. There's no real, it takes a lot to put a show like that on by yourself. EA has been doing it for years. A lot of these other people have started building their own stages and their own events and really drawing the attention. But you have to remember the real power of E3 is bringing video games into the mainstream, right? Like, E3 is when actual, like, not industry trades, like, pay, or not industry media pays attention to video games. You get interview. I mean, Ryan and Miranda, you've both done them in years past, right? You get interviews USA Today or Newsweek or New York Times, whatever. So the power of E3 is really bringing all eyes. It's to borrow a phrase that you use all the time, Ryan, it's the Death Star approach, right? Like, this is that one time of year where all eyes and all efforts are focused squarely on what's happening in our industry. And you don't really get that with a digital event. So, you know, I should say you don't get the same amount of potency. So it is good that they're doing something. I think I saw like a 6-figure price tag to be involved, which seems contradictory to, you know, the spirit of it, where if the guys who can't afford a 6-figure price tag are doing their own thing, what does that, you know, what does that do for the rest who can't afford to do their own thing? It's just putting them in the exact same situation. So
you're also not buying booth space.
Yeah, that's true too, which is weird because so much of that price tag I've heard, I mean, I've never seen the ledger or anything, but I've heard so much of that price tag was just the square footage of the convention center that you were purchasing. So it's still too early. I don't know what's going to shake out. You know, IGN will have its own plans as well. ESA will have its own plans. Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo are going to do their own thing, obviously. And we'll see EA play again for the fourth year in a row. So there's a lot up in the air right now. I'm not exactly sure how it's going to shake out yet, but I think everyone right now is looking at June and being like, okay, who are we teaming up with? What are we doing? So it should be eventful and fun this year as well. It'll just be a little different again.
Well, Microsoft and Phil Spencer specifically in years past have continually reiterated their support for E3 and wanting to be a part of it. So presumably we can count Microsoft in for this based on those past statements. But we'll see. As I said, you know, EA has done their own thing. Sony skipped out on the last proper E3. We shall see. Now, if we do get everybody signing up for this, and there is sort of the previews, the 14th there, I presume that would be press conference day, and I wonder if everybody will even end up going in the same order. You know, we'd see Microsoft in the morning, and then Ubisoft, then EA, and then Sony at night. But
I don't even think it gets that comfortable anymore, because last year, like, the first parties want to be close enough where they can ride each other's waves and hype, but far enough away where they're not cannibalizing one another. And I mean, last year feels like a million years ago, but I think I recall last year they were like a week apart. Is that right? Or multiple days apart?
Well, you mean the last proper E3 or 2020?
No, 2020.
Well, oh, they were well up. I mean, it was Microsoft like went in July and didn't, well, didn't no, Sony
Microsoft
do their thing
had
in
a May
June?
Event as well. Yeah.
Right. The third party thing that didn't go over very well.
So you're talking about three or, yeah, I forgot about that. So you're talking about 3 or 4 weeks space. So, I mean, it's the onus is on the ESA to have something potent enough for them to want to be involved, and that would dictate schedules. If it's not there, then why would Microsoft and Sony go in the same week or same month, you know? So it's just a lot. Go ahead.
Yeah. I just want to say that I do like the idea of having that expectation that these things are going to be together at once. Mm-hmm. So, Cam, to your point, like, yes, a lot of people did do their own conferences. But for example, with Sony, it was just like, are you guys going to say anything soon? Like, what's happening?
That game of chicken was so frustrating.
It took so long. And it's like every week it's like, is this the week they have a conference? Is this the week they announce something? Who can say? And so I think having that sort of schedule is really helpful. And that's one thing I did really appreciate that Microsoft did last year with all of their sort of planned Xbox announcements. And that was helpful for me, just so we know that there's something happening. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, pre-pandemic, we did have sort of that expectation of, oh, this is happening. And really the only outlier for that was mostly Nintendo to an extent, where Sony did even have, you know, its PlayStation fan events too, where they were going to have their own sorts of announcements and festivities. And Xbox as well. So I think having E3, if anything, it's mostly for me just having the expectation of news, right? Yeah. And of course, we don't know who's going to be there. And we're going to talk about Bethesda here soon. But I think there's a lot of questions as far as like what's going to be presented. But I think if the ESA is coming forth and saying, hey, we're going to do this, then they probably already have at least enough interest to have a digital event already that will be exciting enough for them to say, if we have these 2 days scoped out, unless they're just hoping people come, if I could say.
Well, on that note, yes, Bethesda, that was the thing that occurred to me as well. Okay, if E3 is back and if Microsoft participates and has their press conference during that, another frequent participant in E3 press conferences is Bethesda. They would actually be the ones that would go first on Sunday night if we're not counting EA doing their own thing on Saturday. So, does Bethesda have their own press conference, even though with the acquisition being finalized at some point this year? I would think no. Do you guys think that Bethesda would still do their own thing?
No.
I think if they were, this would be the last year. But I also agree with you. I don't think they're going to do their own event just because it's so expensive. And if you can curtail all the stuff that you want to show onto, you know, within Microsoft's showcase, then there's no reason to put your own thing out there. Honestly, it's I think it kind of depends on what else they have to show, right? This isn't Evil Within year. This isn't you know, like the smaller Bethesda titles.
Deathloop will be out, and Ghostwire Tokyo probably won't be, but it's a PlayStation timed exclusive.
That'll be
so. I guess that'll be on. That'll be a Microsoft game on Sony's stage.
What a time to be alive! I'm gonna say no. Short answer.
And yeah. Cam, you said you don't think there'll be a separate Bethesda press conference either.
Yeah, no, I basically echo everything that Brennan just said, is that I don't think that I don't really know what they would show. And like, even this year, like if you know, hypothetically there wasn't a acquisition and they did have their own show, I'm going to be like, I would just think, well, what are you showing? Because I feel like that there's, you know, that people are, like a lot of games are being out right now, and then a lot of other developers are like in the middle of working on their next big titles, that I just don't really know what they would show. Like maybe Starfield, if that's close to being shown off in any way, but outside of that, I just can't really think about what else that they would show outside of like updates regarding their live, you know, their live titles like Fallout 76, ESO maybe, things like that. So
I think we get that. And you, like, they'll, the more I think about it, the more I think like 4 or 5 minutes of Bethesda within the Microsoft showcase makes sense, where to Cam's point, they'll talk about ESO. They'll talk about the future for Doom. They'll talk about, you know, Deathloop post-launch support maybe or something, and then drop Starfield. And if I were Microsoft, if I were Daddy Piggy Banks Microsoft, I would say, all right, we gotta get you back out there in the spotlight. You know, you've had a rough couple of years. We gotta get you back on it. And I would want a 5-second CGI tease to whatever the next Elder Scrolls is. Just be like a dragon, like winking at camera, you know, something like that.
They already did that last year, though.
That's just a quick. Yeah. The fun.
But we
didn't
have a dragon winking.
That was like 2 years ago.
Or 2 years ago. Yeah, it was 2 years ago. Yeah. It was 2 years ago. That was just for them to say, like, hey,
it's coming. Yeah.
Elder Scrolls 6 is coming. Shut up. Shut up.
Pretty much.
My cat is also very angry about this.
I'm with you guys. I don't think there would be a separate Bethesda conference, not only for the excellent point you guys are making about, you know, this feels like a development year rather than a show stuff year, because you guys already pointed, Deathloop will be out from Arcane. Doom Eternal just came out last year, and there's the second DLC story expansion that'll probably be out by E3. And they'll be probably way too early on whatever their next thing is, presumably a third mainline Doom game. And then Ghostwire Tokyo, I can't imagine that's on Microsoft stage, given that it's a timed PlayStation exclusive.
Right.
And so, the big one is Starfield, and whether or not this is the year they show it off. I mean, I think there's a pretty good chance, because the thing is, when we've said this a bunch of times before since the acquisition was announced, $7.5 billion, you're going to want to make a big splash at the next big event, which is E3. So, you know, you've spent that kind of money, you're going to want to have something major to show off at your Xbox press conference if you're Microsoft. And that thing is Starfield, which, let's be honest, is, I would argue, at this point in time, Starfield's would be an even bigger reveal than the next Halo Infinite reveal, because we've already seen something of Halo Infinite, and this is the next Todd Howard game, their first original IP in forever. Starfield's the biggest card up their sleeve. It's the ace up their sleeve, and you just paid $7.5 billion. So yeah, I think I'm with you guys. No Bethesda separate press conference, and we'll see Starfield be the thing at Microsoft's press conference this year. All right. Speaking of Bethesda, unfortunately, some sad news to report with regard to Bethesda. Robert Altman, the founder and CEO up till now of ZeniMax Media, has passed away at the age of 73. He's Born in 1947, he began his career as a lawyer in Washington, D.C., which is, probably explains in part why Bethesda is where it is in Maryland there outside of D.C. In 1999, Altman and Bethesda Softworks founder Christopher Weaver established ZeniMax Media as the new parent company for the Maryland-based game studio. And under Altman, listen to this, ZeniMax grew to include a number of renowned game studios, including Arkane, id, Machine Games, Tango Gameworks, which of course is now all going to be part of the Microsoft family. But combined, these studios worked on some of the biggest games in the industry: Fallout, Wolfenstein, Dishonored, Doom, of course, Elder Scrolls is strangely not on that article write-up of ours. And Mr. Altman's survived by his wife, Linda Carter. Yes, that Linda Carter, and two children. Bethesda's company statement here is, quote, "We are deeply saddened to tell you of the passing of Robert A. Altman, our founder and CEO. He was a true visionary, friend, and believer in the spirit of people and the power of what they could accomplish together. He was an extraordinary leader and an even better human being." So condolences to his wife, Linda Carter, his children, and the entire ZeniMax family. I mean, from I've never met him. I mean, I've met a lot of Bethesda folks from, you know, Pete Hines, Todd Howard, and a lot of game developers there, but never met Mr. Altman. But from, I saw so many developer posts on Twitter, all really expressing the similar sentiment that this was apparently, that Altman was really just a genuinely good person and not just a guy in a suit making, you know, millions of dollars for a business. That's right. There was, I guess the way to contextualize this for the Unlocked crowd, just for our purposes of conversation here, is number one is that he was a good person. That is not always true of people in general, and certainly people in those kinds of positions. They're not always the nicest people, and Robert Altman apparently was. But really, the guy clearly was able to be both a nice person and an excellent business person as well, because you go from Todd Howard's little Elder Scrolls team to something and you grow that into something that one of the biggest companies in the world, Microsoft, comes along and pays $7.5 billion to acquire. So that really speaks to Mr. Altman's business acumen. And it's a shame. It's a shame that he won't be able to see the handoff to Microsoft through. But condolences to the entire Altman family. All right, back to let's talk something a little more game specific here. Grand Theft Auto V, one of my favorite games of all time, just continues to crush. I couldn't believe this when I read it. I mean, I could, but I couldn't. In an earnings brief, Take-Two, the parent company of Rockstar, revealed that Grand Theft Auto V is now up over 140 million copies to date. And they've sold 10 million more units since May. So like in less than a year. And in calendar 2020, GTA 5 sold more copies than in any other year except for 2013, when the game first came out, and it did 32.5 mil right out of the gate in 2013. And of course, it came out in September, so it did that in a quarter. GTA Online continues to crush. They more players each month in 2020 than any other month since launch, and same thing, more GTA Online players in the full year of 2020 than in any other year since launch. This thing's unstoppable. Cam, are you a GTA 5 fan?
Here's the thing. I like all Rockstar games, but I've never been a big GTA person. I love Red Dead Redemption 2. Like, I am just dying for whatever next gen console update for that game that I think is inevitable. That was my favorite game of the last generation. and one of my favorite games of all time. But you know, GTA 5, like, it's just an approachable game for like such a huge audience, and it's just fun. It's just fun to go in there, like, to just, you know, mess around, put in, I don't know if GTA 5 has this, but like, you put in the cheat codes, get like a tank, and just,
sure,
you know, have a whole lot of fun, you know, get those 5 stars. GTA Online, I've heard great things about the heists. I've heard, and that's like one of the things that I actually kind of want to jump into GTA Online for, is to try out the heists, because those sound fun. Like, that's something that I'm just like, I would really enjoy. But you know, the thing that I'm actually curious about is, I wonder if the copies that were given out through the Epic Game Store last year are included in this, because there was a week, I want to say, where the Epic Game Store gave away the game for free. So I'm curious if that.
I don't think it was. I don't think those are included.
Okay.
I believe this is still copies sold, not just distributed.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. But yeah. You know. This game is just nonstop. You know, we're not going to see GTA 6 for a while. Still, this is like the third generation's going now, and it's still trucking.
Miranda, this is it might as well just be burned into your monitor as the head of IGN's Wikis team. I mean, it's one of our highest traffic pages. Is not people just continue to come look for cheat codes and game help with this?
Yes, there is a lot to find and do in GTA 5, especially if you've already played through the campaign. It's like, all right, time to whip out the cheats. So, yes, there are plenty of cheats in GTA 5. But one thing that I have definitely seen is, this has always been popular, but I think even more so, I've seen more people interacting with the GTA Online role-playing community, which I don't know if you guys have ever seen those streams, but they're so fun. And so if you haven't really heard much about this, what they do is they have these servers set up where you have to be in character. Like, you have to take a character in Los Santos, and if you break it, you get booted. Like, you are banned from the server. So it's just a really fun way, because like, there's just so much to do. And then there was a new heist that came out, so I'm sure that was really popular with people. But just the community that's built around GTA Online is really interesting. So I think I'm not really surprised to hear that it's still doing well. but it's cool to see that the popularity of online is just shown in this way too. Like, I've already seen my own numbers of like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Or I've seen people get on Twitch. But then just having that earnings brief to talk about it makes a lot of sense.
Brandon, are you surprised that it's still, that it's just had its best year since launch?
I mean, am I surprised? Yeah, I think so. I would not expect it to have its best year now, right? This game came out, 2013? And 2013. has been available on, across two different generations for a number of different consoles with a number of different modes. So the sales figures kind of line up. I mean, look, all of this is, without the context of understanding, it is a once in a generation kind of game. You know, there are certain games, like Miranda just said, there are certain games that sort of go beyond just being a video game and become a platform for creativity and community. I could think like Minecraft is easily there. Skyrim is easily there, I think, with the modding community, and GTA as well. So I'm not surprised to see the sales figures, especially because once the community gets a hold of it, they continue to create and Rockstar has continued to support it. But the fact that it sold more over the last 12 months than it has in any other 12-month period, it's kind of mind melting to me, especially knowing that we're going to get next gen versions soon. So it's not even like they're putting it on everything like Skyrim, right? You could play Skyrim on your refrigerator. It's not just an accuracy by volume. This is a game that continues to be sought after by the audience, and just sort of further illustrates the fact that Rockstar could just do whatever they want, anything. They can do anything.
I mean, that's a good point. The GTA 6 is in development. As Cam noted, who knows when the heck we'll see it. There's obviously no pressure to put it out anytime soon. It's almost like a major band. Like, do you want to put out a new album while the old one is still like top of the charts? Is that even a good idea? But yeah, like the budget not, I mean, GTA 5 had effectively an unlimited budget. You know, it was in development for a long time. They spared no expense, Jurassic Park style. And this one now, like, there's nothing that Take-Two says no to, right? If Rockstar says, we need
to steal the Declaration of Independence.
Exactly.
And they're like, okay.
Yeah, fine.
Well, you need to blow up the Statue of Liberty? That's fine. We'll cover it.
Yeah. No worries. But yeah, it's like, there's no financial pressure. There's no time pressure. The only pressure on Rockstar at this point is topping themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, which I don't say flippantly, like that's a real thing. Like, I am of the opinion, I've said this many times before, I think it's 140 million copies. I think it's well earned. I believe GTA 5 is one of the greatest games ever made. I think it's just an incredible artistic and technical achievement. I'm really excited to do another playthrough. I haven't played it in a while now. I want to do another run through the campaign when the next gen versions hit. And I think at that time, that's also when I want to dive into some of this GTA Online content that I haven't played. Like, I played the first heist that they put out, the online heist, but not the new one. So I want to dig into all of that. You guys are all invited. Let's do it. Four players.
I can't wait for this. I can't wait. Because you're going to get out of your apartment into a community that's been going on
for
7 years. You're going to have your nice suit on. You're going to have your sunglasses, a very modest, reasonable four-door sedan. And then someone with like bunny ears wearing a mini skirt with fishnets and a hockey mask on is going to be like fresh meat.
And like everyone, a monster truck.
Yeah. Look at the new blood. It's going to be like the Purge. I can't wait.
Oh, that'll be good. Yeah. But yeah, it's really insane. Like, I wonder what GTA 6 even is. Even, you know, how do you follow it? What do you do? At
Vice
this
City,
point,
baby.
Yeah.
Go back to Vice City, baby.
Is it even
you never
a video
know.
Game?
You know? That would be like, that would be something. Cause I actually do remember, like, Vice City is probably the closest GTA game that I have like love for. And if GTA 6 was going back to Vice City, I would get it. I would get it.
Yeah, I would too, in a heartbeat. That was my favorite before, I think probably before 5. I just love that aesthetic. I love the soundtrack. Everything about just like the really overproduced 80s vibes that you got from it were fantastic.
See, I would respectfully argue that Vice City, that you guys love Vice City for reasons, for everything but Vice City itself. You know, Ray Liotta was great. The time period was great. The soundtrack was great. The story was great. Vice City is actually my personal least favorite. And that's not to say I think it's a great game. It's a great, great game. But Vice City is the most geographically uninteresting piece of land that Grand Theft Auto's ever been on, in my opinion.
I think you're right. And I mean, I think you're right only because I don't remember. Like,
it's a flat rectangle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never wanted to be a city planner. Like, I don't know how good is one city versus another. I think just the more detailed and the more interesting that they are, Vice City has the unfortunate, you know, the unfortunate truth working against it that, you know, it came out over a decade ago, not longer. So, maybe it's just
Vice City is going to turn 20 in next year.
Two decades ago.
Yeah.
But you know, who's to say that like Vice City in 2020, you know, 6 isn't the best version of a GTA city. And that's just because of know-how and time. But I think you're right. Like, I don't remember the city, but I also think the majority of what makes Grand Theft Auto games interesting are the personality and the character that they
bring
to those. So I think for those reasons is why I love Vice City so much, even though I can't remember like the square footage or, you know, how interesting the streets were.
Yeah, I think that I don't disagree at all, but I do also think a bit, at least, and maybe it's different for different people. For me, another significant part of the appeal of GTA is the geography, is the land. Yeah. Like the first GTA 3, the three separate sort of chunks that unlocked as you progressed in GTA 3 of Liberty City were really interesting. Each of them just like felt like, oh, this whole new, totally different area that I'm exploring. And then San Andreas, of course, blew it out of the water completely with, you know, with San Andreas, with San Fierro, with what was the Vegas called? Las Venturas, was it? I don't quite remember but you had the, and then all the like rural country in between.
Yeah.
And then four going back to Liberty City again, still, it was such a dense, detailed environment that made it really interesting. And then five kind of went back San Andreas's way. And, you know, you've got San Andreas or Los Santos proper, and then all the rural stuff out in the country. And it's so, That's the only reason I would not want to go back to Vice City. I mean, I'm sure it would be great, right? But I'd love to see them do something new. But yeah, it's what a franchise it is, and I just can't wait to see how they decide to try and top themselves. All right, quick check of the clock here. All right, we've got to move on. We've got about 9 minutes left before everybody's got to move on to their next meetings and things. So, gosh, I'm leaving like three, yeah.
You get time for one
news stories on the table. My goodness, we'll have to. We need to do like an Unlocked After Dark kind of thing where we can just like the alcohol comes out and then we just start talking about the rest of this stuff. Let's move to the loot box instead for now, and hear from Luke. From the Xbox Expansion Pass.
Hey, Unlock Crew. Luke from the Xbox Expansion Pass here. My question for you is a simple one. Right now, 2021 looks fairly dry in the AAA space as far as first party goes for Microsoft. Are we expecting to hear more about a first party slate in 2021, or are we expecting it to be a bit more dry overall due to pandemic or other reasons? Certainly 2022 looks bright, but do we expect this year to have any major titles that we yet don't know about? Take care, guys.
Cam, let me go your way first. You think Microsoft's got any big surprises left that we'll actually see this year?
Well, there was this rumor going about like last week or maybe 2 weeks ago that they might have like two hidden first party games under their belt. I don't know like the validity to that or what those could possibly be. But I think just going right now, this is Halo Infinite's year, you know. It was supposed to be last year, but it's this year now. I think that 2022 is going to be a really big year. I think that's going to be Hellblade. I think potentially there's Fable, there's Everwild. I think those have potential of coming out in 2022 as well. Forza. Yeah, so there could be Starfield. I could see coming out in 2022. At the earliest, I'd be really surprised if that was announced for this year. You know, there's 2021 is, you know, more or less a just, you know, we're going to show you things that are coming in 2022.
Miranda?
I think we'll get at least something else in addition to Halo. I just think they haven't announced it yet. As we have established, last year was supposed to be Halo's year, so I think they probably would have had something planned for this year. It is the first year of the Xbox Series X out in the world. It would be baffling to me for them to not have something else in addition to Halo, unless it's pandemic delays.
Right.
And maybe they'll message that. We never know until they say something about it. So I do think we're going to get some surprises this year. But also, I want Gears, guys. Where's Gears 6? Just kidding. It's probably next year. I'm excited.
They've been on kind of a generally 3 year cycle with the Gears games, right? So that would put it at 2022, right? Mm-hmm. It was 29th September 2019. Is that right? Yeah, because it wasn't last year.
No, it was not last year. It's the year before.
Yeah.
This might be an unpopular opinion, but I would rather get Gears 2 remaster before we get Gears 6 because Gears 2 is my favorite Gears, and oh my god, I want a remaster of that game so bad.
I definitely want Gears 6 over that, but that's
no,
okay.
What? Gears 2 is so year. Good!
It is good, but I'd rather have Gears 6. I want to know more about the story.
Cam, I gotta say, I mean, all I have is my own intuition and gut feeling. I feel like the ship probably sailed on that because they did, of course, the Gears 1 remaster. I feel like they probably would have done. They would have done 2 by now if they were gonna do it.
That could be. They did 1 and then they did 5, so you know now they can do 2 and then they can do 6.
They did 1 and then the Gears 1 remaster was before Gears 4, wasn't it?
Oh, it was before Gears 4.
Yes, it was their first. It was their first project. It was 4, then it was 5.
Yeah, they got
so
their
if they go
feet
back to
wet.
2, yeah. If
I'm still.
So they remaster one game every trilogy, essentially.
I'm still gonna dream big. I'm still gonna dream big. Coalition, please remaster Gears 2. In my opinion, it is the best Gears game to this day. I still remember that campaign vividly. Please remaster Gears 2.
There you go. You heard it here first. Brandon Tyrell, what do you think? You think Microsoft's got something else hiding up their sleeve for 2021 besides Halo?
I do. I agree with Miranda. I think that this is the first year that the next-gen console is out in the wild. It would be kind of silly to assume that Halo would have dropped last year and then they would have nothing to follow it up this year outside of the medium and a few other third-party things. But I also don't think that these are going to be, like, you know, blow the world away franchise kind of games. If Starfield comes to fruition, they announce at E3, and they follow what's becoming more of a trend in the industry, which is shorter marketing cycles. So from announcement to launch, if they follow that and Starfield goes big at E3 and they drop it in November or whatever, you know, that's a big game. That's arguably the biggest game in their portfolio right now, upcoming portfolio. But I do think we're going to see some of these smaller side projects from the first party studios. Every studio's got an R&D team or a team that is scoping out other ideas, prototyping. So I think we could see some things along the lines of like Ninja Theory's Bleeding Edge, or maybe something smaller from, you know, games that sort of the likes of Rare in that sort of scope, you know, nothing huge, sort of like mid-tier kind of, you know, smaller, more compact games, more grounded, more... things like that. I don't think we're going to see a big hidden AAA first party game that, you know, they just didn't reveal, but I would love to be wrong about that.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you guys. I mean, I feel like Microsoft's shown most of their cards at this point, at least as far as we know, it seems like it. Like, we know what most of the studios, the new studios are up to. But yeah, hitting on something a couple of you mentioned, I think Starfield's the big one that it's like the wild card for this year because they, of course, when Halo Infinite was planned to be the big launch title, I imagine the Bethesda acquisition, even if they were talking about it back then, they didn't know. They probably didn't know that it was going to happen. They thought, well, maybe, but if Starfield, if it's actually ready to go this year, then that's the one. I mean, imagine like a 1-2 punch for them of Halo and Starfield in November or October, November, if Starfield is goes in October. I mean, that suddenly that's the first time Microsoft can really hit back at Sony in the like major exclusives department. But if not, and it falls to 2022, Cam just gave quite a list of major 2022 games that we probably should expect to see out of first party studios. So I guess the bottom line is, even if this year ends up being the year of Halo and not much else, the floodgates appear to be opening in 2022, and they may never, hopefully those gates will never close again after 2022 with all these studios that Microsoft's got in the fold now.
And they're apparently trying to acquire more studios. So
that'd be good.
Even bigger.
The more the merrier.
Yeah.
All right. So we are at it. We'll have to hold Unlock Block Trivia till next week because we have hit time, the producer mandated time. You can find me on Twitter at DMC_Ryan. Cam, where can we find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at CamFinalMix, and I stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/CamFinalMix Tuesdays through Fridays, 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific time. And I'm currently playing through Halo 2 on Legendary.
Nice. Brandon Tyrell.
Find me on Twitter at Brandon Tyrell. Just my name.
Perfect. And yes, producer John Borba, I'm blaming you for this because people always ask, why aren't the podcasts longer? Well, there are production reasons. Believe me, there are good reasons. Miranda Sanchez, take us home.
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, wherever you have a username, probably at Havoc Risen. That's Havoc with a K.
Brilliant. For Miranda, Brandon, and Cam, and super producer John Borba,
and David.
I'm Ryan McCaffrey. This was Unlocked 481. Busy times in Xbox land. We'll see you next week.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.